On the cover, we see a bird made not of flesh and feather, but of metal and spark. Its owl-like eyes stare intensely as though they can see through the page. Surrounding it are the head and shoulders of our heroes, now in the hints of formal wear. Below them, along the bottom of the cover, a dark, murky sea.
Are you seeking thrilling tales of adventure and superheroics? Do you crave the weekly drama of teenage hijinks and high school angst? Then don't miss the next issue of These Protean City Comics. This issue featuring...
I'm Alina. They call me the seamstress. Once I start pulling on threads, mysteries unravel.
Ladies, gentlemen, children of all ages, welcome to the center ring. I'm Highwire, and my life's like a three-ring circus.
I'm Will-O-the-Wisp, and I'll be the light in the dark.
I'm Virgo Regulus, and from the banks of the river to the cobbled street, I'm the dandiest lion you'll ever meet.
Now with our heroes assembled, let's turn the page on this issue of Protean City Comics.
This is Flickering Streets, issue number 3, Lives of the Most Notorious Automaton. On the first panel of our comic, we see Jane, the woman in the blue dress, and she is climbing down the hill of where the train tracks meet up with the water. The area where we saw Celeste and Sam exploring earlier. It is early morning. The sun has not quite fully risen yet, and she's looking around. We see a panel of her hearing something from the water, and we see a panel of the water itself now frothing as though things are moving inside it. We start to see lights and colors and shapes emerging from the water. Jane scrambles to find a group of reeds to hide behind, and she watches as this enormous automaton, like the one we saw our heroes fighting in the last issue, and it is carrying a huge crate of crystals that look like they are on fire, and they sparkle with just energy. And it slowly walks its way up onto the earth, and with it are these two humanoid figures that are, but rather than wearing clothes, they are covered in scales, and you can see they have gills, and they walk up and watch as the steambot carries its cargo up onto the train tracks and begins to move in one direction towards the city. Convinced that their delivery has been made successfully, they turn and start to walk back into the water, their legs merging once more into fins as they sort of dive back down into the ocean, returning to where they came from. Jane waits until things are quiet and then turns to move away and runs straight into the black oil-skinned form of Smokejack, who exhales smoke and steam all around them. And we're going to cut to our heroes on the top of a courthouse, having regathered to figure out what on earth is even going on. We can see behind them the deflated shell of the dirigible draped over a few rows of houses, now mostly not on fire. The fire brigade below them, with their enormous sort of steam engine water deployment systems spraying out over this once fiery hulk, and getting things under control at this point. And so our heroes have a moment to sit and maybe exchange names for the first time. What are you thinking? How are you handling all of this?
Alina probably is sort of assessing each member of this crew that we find ourselves in. She probably just says, "Oh, right. I'm Alina. Your names, please."
Celeste is actually going to be taking a knife out of a brick wall on the other side of the room, because that's what happens. And kind of walks back over and hands it to Alina, and just says, "I'm Celeste.
Celeste, good to meet you." We both turn expectantly to the other two.
I think Zoe is going to, like, yawn because you said the sun's come up, so she's been up for, like,
a while.
24 hours straight by now.
Get on our list.
They call me Will-O-The-Wisp.
I'm satisfied that he is now the last one to introduce himself. Virgo does, like, a half curtsy, half bow in his very fancy dandy outfit. And introduces himself as Virgo of House Regulus. And I like the idea of there being like a couple panels where they're all just kind of like quiet and not saying anything and just looking back and forth. And then I think Virgo clears his throat and says, "Did anyone happen to get the names of those people who were fighting us?"
No.
There is an entity that has been plaguing our city in recent months. His name is Whispered, never spoken, except by people who aren't afraid of him, like me. He calls himself Smoke Jack.
Is he the fabulous man with the fire and the smoke?
Yeah, he's the, I don't know if they'd say asshole, but he's the asshole who tried to incinerate me earlier.
Yes, the fabulous man who tried to kill us.
I think Virgo, like, clutches his broken ribs and just says, "Fantastic.
My sir, I am concerned that you may be too dim-witted."
take not my spectacle for ignorance, for I am consumed by wondrous infatuation. I acknowledge the danger this man possesses, but at the same time, he is, as the children say on the street, quite hot.
Yeah, he breathes fire. We know that. Like, Zoe's like gonna reach into her pocket and pull out a handful of corns. Like, "I'm gonna get food. Do you want food?"
"Food would be lovely."
"It sounds like a marvelous idea."
"Sure."
As you turn to go, presumably, and climb off of this rooftop, you do notice that a bird has landed, like this, and as you turn to sort of, like, I think you were focusing on talking to each other, and so you may not have noticed it at first, but as you turn to sort of move and walk away, you notice that this owl has landed on the edge of the rooftop. You can see that this owl is not quite what it seems. It is, as you get closer, it is clearly made of metal. And is kind of like just standing there and in these like jerky motions, kind of turning and looking and following you as you move around the roof. And it has a letter in its beak. And as whoever walks up close to it first, it would turn to them and sort of present this letter to them.
"Wondrous." And I think Virgo, just like without thinking that anything is strange, accepts a letter from a bird.
Yeah, I kind of want Zoe to, like, stream past Virgo as light and snatch the letter from the bird first.
It's very good.
This kind of mechanical owl sort of tilts its head, blinks a couple times, and then it comes apart into, like, sort of three smaller sections, and the different parts of this machine, this automaton bird, reconfigure as a monkey, and it kind of like climbs over the sides of the building and just heads off down the street, swinging from like lamppost to lamppost. The letter, I think it's just a note card. It's not like actually an envelope. It's just a note card, and it says, "To the mysterious people, I would like to speak with you again. Please come to my house." And there's an address, and it's signed Professor Morris.
What a peculiar creature, and what an exciting invitation.
"Oh, it looks like we just got invited to breakfast. Excellent. I only have 15 cents left on me anyways."
Meanwhile, Virgo's patting like a giant stack of bills. Like, well. But yeah, he says, "Well, it seems happenstance and violence have made us friends. And now, as friends, we must endeavor to do that which friends are always destined to do, which is dine together and then celebrate together."
Do you always use, like, 30 words more than you need to use to say things?
Absolutely. It's the most incredible way to speak.
Cool.
It's like editor's note, you know, writers during this day and age were paid by the word.
All right, let's go, Dickens.
You find the address is not too far from here. Professor Morris lives central to the city. So
we know where she lives. It just crashed into the town square.
That's true. Yes. Yes. She was obviously coming back here. She is a major figure in the city, so you probably know where her house is anyway. But it is this large brick building that is maybe, it's on a road that has a row of houses, and her house looks like it is maybe half a block's worth of these sort of row houses that have been connected into one large mansion. And you find your way to the front door. Who would be the first of you to sort of approach this door and knock on it or ring a bell?
I would probably go up first, seeing as I was the one who had contact with Professor Morris as I was saving her life.
Yes.
So I kind of feel like she would be chill with me, like just dropping by, seeing as she invited us.
So you knock on this door, and it's like a very large door, even normal doors considered, but also considering that she is a small kind of mousy woman. And you knock on the door, and I think it's even before you knock once and you go to knock a second time, and before you can really knock, the door opens, and standing behind the door is a very, very tall, finely tailored person in a very sort of tight vest with lots of ornate embroidery on it, a long coat-tailed jacket, and a very and like the top half or two-thirds of their face is covered in a bronze mask of a Roman face, and the person sort of looks down at you and says, hello.
Good morning. My name is Alina Mars. I've come to call on Professor Morris. I received an invitation not too long ago.
We received an invitation. And Zoe holds it up as she walks past into the house.
As you sort of barge past, this person, we'll punch in and get an editor's note that explains that this is the Roman who is Professor Morris's personal butler, I guess, but really bodyguard and protector. And so they will step back and let you pass. Not that they really have much choice, as you have just barged past them anyway. They will probably take the card from you and say, yes, I believe that Professor Morris was expecting you. She will see you in the dining room, and sort of gestures towards a room adjacent. When you sort of walk down this hallway, you will see that the house is full of just different kinds of art. It's a very old house. It's eclectic. It's full of stuff. And the dining room itself is even has pieces of machinery in it. Blueprints up on the wall. The way that people would normally display art. Professor Morris is displaying the blueprints of the dirigible that you just saw be destroyed last night. And there is a kitchen, or there's a big dining room table, very fancy, kind of dark hardwood, full of food. And this small woman is going to come over to you and say, yes, thank you. I'm so glad that you were able to, I'm so glad that I was able to catch you before you ran away into the night. I was hoping that I would get to speak with you all again, or for the first time for some of you. Please. Oh, sorry. Where are my manners? Please come in and eat. It's morning. It's breakfast. You should be rewarded. I believe that you were, that you prevented a greater catastrophe from happening last night.
Oh, don't mind if I do. Zoe's going to grab bread and cheese, I think is always tasty and periods appropriate.
I think Virgo follows, but just loads up his plate with everything. Like whatever's being offered, it's on there.
After you have a moment to go collect some food and sit, mm-hmm. Professor Morris is going to kind of go to take, like, maybe like get halfway through taking one bite of food and then put it down, put her fork back down, and sort of put her hands on the table and say, let's get to the point, shall we? How did you all come to be out in the city doing fantastic things in the middle of the night as my Zeppelin was being destroyed?
Well, saw stuff.
Please go ahead.
It looked like stuff was on fire, and I just kind of decided to help, which might not have been a smart thing to do, but it turned out okay, so...
Do you always run to things that are on fire?
More often than most people, probably.
That's a good quality in a person.
Is it?
And I think that she's trying to shift your labels. She is trying to, she's trying to raise your savior up and I think drop your mundane.
Sure, I'll accept that.
And she's going to turn to the rest of you and say, what brought you there? I know that I've seen some of you. She turns to you, Alina, and says, I saw you fight quite an impressive automaton. Not most people on the street could be able to do that. Where did you learn to do such a thing?
Well, ma'am, I have brothers.
She gives you a strange look. Okay, I guess that technically explains it, but doesn't really explain it. And then she's gonna turn to Zoe and Virgo and say, brothers and a disregard for one's personal safety may explain these two, but I saw you doing some incredible things. Explain yourselves.
Well, ma'am, I appreciate the invitation, but if I might, there is no reason for us to explain ourselves to you. You owe only your thanks to us, and we only owe you your gracious acceptance.
Perhaps true, but the people who want good things for this city should stick together. And I think that what little I know of you suggests that, at the very least, you are not connected with the people who want things to be bad for the city.
Celeste just stares down at her plate. Definitely not connected to anyone who wants bad things for the city.
Yeah, definitely not.
Well, everyone's been presumably sitting at the table eating, so he's been walking around looking at all the schematics of things on the walls, and she's going to say, I actually have a question for you. So you sent your mechanical bird to give us an invitation, why did it turn into a monkey and crawl away instead of just flying away? That seems like it would have been much more efficient.
I think Virgo cuts in and says... And just like turns to Zoe and just says, well, one must always endeavor never to pass up an opportunity for peculiarity.
And also, you would be surprised at how complicated programming an automaton to fly is. It was much simpler for Trip to return on foot.
Trip?
Yes.
The beast has a name.
It's more of a construct than a beast, but a fine companion. A simple one at that. Certainly not as complex as the fully man-sized one that you fought last night, but we'll get there eventually.
Do you know why that automaton was attacking your Zeppelin? It seems as if it might be personal.
And she's going to kind of like give you this like really, really intense stare and just say, well, young lady, I am brilliant. Anyone in possession of an enormous construct like that one we saw last night would be interested in compelling my brilliant mind to work on it and perfect it.
Yeah, no. Smokejack's collecting scientific minds in the community.
Who else has been collected?
Professor Logio from the Advanced Computational Studies Department at the university.
And she kind of blanches a little bit and just says, my God, you don't think that he built that for them, do you?
I don't believe so. His analytical engine would not fit within the size of that automaton. It would be like taller than a clock tower.
No, I've been telling him for years to let me assist him in compacting its size, but he stubbornly refuses to let me help him.
He says he has enough help at the university that he doesn't need to make it any more manageable, so...
Well, the man's a fool, and look where it's gotten him. But we will have to rescue him, I suppose.
Virgo cackles.
I mean, your Zeppelin exploded right before you landed. That's pretty poor design, if I don't say so myself.
Well, it wasn't designed to explode. It was designed to be safe. And I thought that everyone on board was a trustworthy person, so much so that I sent the Roman ahead to secure our facility. And so strange circumstances happen, and, you know, sometimes Zeppelins explode. And that actually brings us to why I have invited you here. If someone was able to board my Zeppelin, if someone was able to determine how to destroy it, which it does seem like someone was able to do, then perhaps the people who surround me are not as trustworthy as I believed them to be. And so we must look outside of the normal. We must look for the strange, the people who fight evildoers in the night. And so I have a proposition for you.
What kind of proposition?
Have you ever been to a party?
Giant smile on Virgo's face.
I mean, it depends on your definition of party.
As you all know, later this evening, Ainsley Lennox is throwing me a welcome back to the Protean City party, and it would be
in your best interest to have extra security.
Yes, and it would be rude of me not to show up. I think we all know that Miss Lennox was in fact behind the attack, and so of course it would be best for us to show up and maybe question her. She wouldn't be so rude as to do anything in public. We'd be relatively safe.
Think of the optics too. If this Lennox person is indeed your rival, showing up to a party with those same folks who foiled her attempt at offing you would be quite a flex indeed.
Just to get things straight, you're gonna go to the party of a woman who tried to murder you like 2 hours ago?
Well, of course.
Unthinkable?
I've been invited. It would be rude not to show up.
Absolutely. Have you never attended a party hosted by someone who wanted to kill you?
It's frankly the most thrilling thing.
Zoe stares at them all in violating societal norms.
So she says, yes. So you will have to, obviously you cannot go dressed like this. You have to find new attire. I can help you. I can provide you with some funding to find yourself some new outfits. But you will attend me as well as my good friend and protector here. You will attend me to the party. You will provide protection for me if things should go that way, but I don't expect they will. But more importantly, I don't know who you are. Nobody knows who you are. You can easily slip away from the party and figure out what they are doing, what their plan is, if they have any more of these automatons, or if they pose some real threat to the city.
So I think in the panel where Professor Morris says, I will provide you with funding to acquire more appropriate attire, Zoe instantly teleports to the seat next to her and is much more invested and interested in this activity now. I mean, if you insist, it would be rude to decline, right?
It would, yes.
Very.
Do you know who else has been invited to this party?
Well, anyone who's anyone. It is a high society party. It is okay. A society party, of course.
All right, I'll be a little more specific. Has Damascus Steel been invited to this party?
Oh, no. Okay. Don't be ridiculous. The man is quite a businessman of his own right, but he's not. It's not the circles that he runs in.
So many layers to high society. Celeste has been debating whether or not to say this for the entire time that we've been here, and eventually just goes, so, you can't ask me why I know this, but Damascus Steel made the automaton that tried to kill everybody last night.
How do you know this?
You can't ask me. There's one rule.
I think very clearly he is capable of it.
Look, people know lots of things. Isn't the information more important than the why?
Well, would be important. To know if the reason why she knows Damascus made the robots is because she is an associate and
no
confederate of Mr. Steele.
I want to jump back to yeah. Virgo. I don't just to clarify. I don't know how much you were really pressing there, but if you really would like to ask her or find out, was that more of a joke or are you actually trying to like pierce her mask?
Yeah, let's go for Pierce the Mask.
All right, then, if you were really trying to get an answer to this question, then would you please roll to Pierce her mask?
Hey, so I got a 3.
Oh,
yowza.
Okay, so you ask her and are kind of like staring at Celeste, trying to like figure out, like get a read on her. And Alina starts to imply subtly that maybe she works with Damascus Steel. And I think that Professor Morris is going to kind of just like raise one small hand and just sort of say, stop. She asked us not to ask her this question. We will not ask her this question. That was rude of you both, and I will not have it. Miss, I do not... Can you explain? I won't ask you how you know, but I was not under the impression that, Damascus Steel, a very inventive ironworker as he is, had the technological ability to build an automaton such as that. What makes you believe this?
Someone else might have commissioned him, but his company made the actual automaton parts. And that's about all I know.
Interesting. Well, I think that we can rightly assume that the person who did the commissioning was none other than Ainsley Lennox.
That would make
but
sense.
Why she would do this is still a question, and a question that we will have to answer, probably from her directly. Which is why we should go to the party.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think the use of a giant automaton is fairly self-evident.
Well,
it throws people real far, I can tell you that much.
Threw me into quite a state of confusion.
She turns to, I think she turns to Zoe and says, how far did it throw you?
Clear across town square. I almost splatted against the clock tower, but some person wrapped me up in ink. I think
she has kind of jumped up and has run over to, she has a it's like schematics of, or map of the town square, because she was sort of designing and constructing the docking mechanism. And so she's trying to figure out how far that is to calculate perhaps how strong this thing is. And she is going to kind of just like gesture behind her how this would happen, but call the local tailors, tell them to assist our friends here with finding attire appropriate for the event this evening, and have them put it on my account. And the Roman will sort of nod sternly and step back out of the room and open the front door.
Alina steps out and flags down a stagecoach and ushers the rest of her party in. I believe I know the very place we should be getting our supplies, getting our attire.
I think Zoe makes a sandwich before she goes.
To bring with. Would you all be going with Alina, or would you have other places to head?
I think Virgo's curious.
Okay.
Same.
He's going out of a sense of how bad can this be? Because his fashion sense is he does not think that his fashion sense is going to match up with the fashion sense of the people whose company he keeps.
Celeste is slightly offended by the idea that this person thinks that she doesn't have something nice enough to wear to a party.
Good.
But is going with it anyway. It's like, fine. Also, Celeste is still currently in her circus attire.
Yes, yeah.
And has been this entire time. And I just keep thinking about that.
So the carriage takes you to Fine Assets. And I think we get a panel of the Fine Assets sign outside of this tailor shop as your carriage pulls up to it and lets you out. When you enter the place, the tailor is moving around, completing some piece of work, moving rolls of fabric around, and is going to stop and can I help you hello Alina, how are you doing? How was your and he kind of like eyes the other people, your evening.
My evening was quite eventful. It seems that there is some treachery afoot in the highest levels of our society.
Well, of course.
We have been invited to attend a party at Ainsley. What?
Lennox?
Lennox.
Okay. Yes. Okay. At Ms. Ainsley Lennox's, at the request or escorting Professor Morris. Professor Morris was so gracious as to extend the invitation after we saved her from her flaming dirigible, which crash this evening or this
of course,
yesterday evening.
I saw it in this morning's post, and of course I also saw the smoke. All of you saved? Helped?
Yes, it was enlightening working with a team of this size.
Interesting. Well,
I felt that it was the best way to I can't very well reject an invitation to the very place that we've been trying to get to.
Of course not. How fortuitous that you were able to make contact with Professor Morris as you did. And
so my associates and I will need some
nicer clothes, of course, yes.
Garments.
Finery.
Yes. Some garments that are suitable so we don't stick out.
And the tailor kind of looks over all of you and says, "Yes, I think that we can make this happen." So what I would like to do now is pull back and just sort of do a little bit of a montage. Let's start with Virgo, because I think that at first, like we in this like page or two of montage, we see that, so like when you're initially looking around in Fine Assets, it's a lot of like the like just blacks and grays and like dark navy blues of like sort of high society bland fashion. It's all put together very well, but it's definitely not Virgo's style. And I think that the tailor kind of like sizes him up and looks around and sees what he's wearing, and he is going to pull you into, or he's going to invite you to come back to a back room that he has, or like a second room that is like definitely much more colorful attire, more variety of shapes and fabrics, and he's going to help you find something there. Cool. It's not a room that perhaps you offer to your average customer, but
mm-hmm. And I am gonna just like be like paging through these like racks of fabrics and jackets and whatever, just kind of wryly ask the tailor, "So do you do work like this often with Alina?" And I'm going to try and pierce the mask.
Okay.
And have a conversation about clothing.
Sure.
That is not about clothing.
Absolutely. Give me that roll.
Ooh.
Oh no.
Okay. It's a 7.
Okay.
Cool.
So you get to ask one question.
I do get to ask one question. I'm gonna ask, what do you want me to do?
What do you want me to do?
I think the end result of whatever it is that Virgo has decided that none of these clothes are appropriate, and he will be using something from his own supply.
So I think the tailor he stops and he said he thinks about your question and comprehends the sort of the other meaning to it, and says, "Yes, I have been training Alina as an apprentice to take over the shop when it's time for me to retire. It would be nice if she had other associates that she could rely on, as I have built a small group of associates, other tailors, you know. So if you could stay in touch, that would be excellent. I hope this mission, I hope this party goes well."
Oh, I have no doubt that the party will be a delightful hit. I do see your concern. It definitely appears that this tailor's shop is unique in its offerings to folks who may not be out doing business in the daytime and may in fact need a few extra requirements for their nighttime activities.
It is, yes. Do you see anything that you like?
No, absolutely not. But I appreciate the tour of your shop and also this chat.
He kind of frowns a little bit and says, "Well, I guess it is the curse of the tailor that that any fine craftsman of clothes cannot provide everyone with everything that they could possibly want. And if my offerings are not of your taste, then that is what it is.
May I offer you a corsage with a very strange camera lens looking thing?
Yeah, you know what? Okay, so actually I think that what he does is he like maybe he reaches into there's like a wall where he has on it hung a bunch of like layers of different vests that have different colors. So you can see all the different kind of like different fabrics of vest that you could buy. And he's going to say, if my fashion is perhaps not of your preferred style, then could I interest you in an accessory? And he kind of like pushes in and slides the whole chunk of the wall back, and behind it there is a whole bunch of different like knives and flare guns and other interesting kind of gadgets.
I think at this, Virgo's eyes light up, and I think the last panel that we see of this scene is just him going, ooh, fabulous.
So what about the rest of you?
I kind of feel like Alina's probably going to be a little bit bossy, because this is her domain.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she's putting down, like, Celeste will pick something up, and Alina will put it down for her and be like, this is much more flexible, and giving her another dress. And then seeing Willow. Oh, no, dear. That is far too flammable for you to be.
I don't light on fire. I turn into light. It's different.
Fair enough.
Not my color, anyways.
And so she's just showing different colors and sort of mm-hmm. saying, this would match your eyes. Is this a masquerade? I should absolutely have asked.
Yeah, I think throughout the scene, I think Zoe is very much outwardly bristling at being told what to do, but also she's very lost in trying to find fancy girl clothing. So she's very much like relying on Alina's expertise here.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, meanwhile, Highwire is having the thing of she knows what she can, that the things that she owns, what she can move in, and is very overwhelmed by the idea of you are buying a dress tonight that you may have to fight in, that you have to wear to a thing that's happening tonight, and is just like, nope, can't do that. Just is like overwhelmed by the entire concept of being like, here, figure out how to move in this in less than 24 hours. So she's probably trying stuff on and just internally being like, nope, we are wearing something from home. We are wearing something from home. She keeps trying to do like circus crazy stuff in whatever she's wearing and just being like, nope, can't do a backbend in this, not wearing it.
I think, yeah, so I think we see a couple panel. We see that montage of you looking through Alina trying to help juggle finding people clothes, mm-hmm. Celeste trying to do circus moves in this kind of not really large enough shop and rejecting things because she can't move around well in them enough. And eventually you either do or do not find something that you are going to wear. Do you want to like have other people you want to go talk to? Is there anything else you want to plan? If Virgo is going to wear something else, then he's got to go home and get it, because it's you're going to have a couple hours to before the party. So
I think Alina would at least be trying to discern more information about Highwire's associates.
Okay.
Her association, how she came by the knowledge. Now, not how she knows, but mm-hmm. maybe like why she knows and why she's being weird about it.
So then let's jump into that scene as Celeste is trying to do some circus maneuver in some piece of clothing and rejecting it is not movable enough, and Alina is sort of helping her find something else. How does that kind of conversation play out?
Perhaps the there's something in silk that might be lighter. She hands her the garment. Just interesting. I've heard quite a bit about Damascus steel, and I wasn't aware that he had such a strong foothold in our city.
As Celeste is just kind of struggling into a new dress, even as she's just being like, nope, this one's not going to work either, before she's even finished putting it on. She's just going to respond with, you hear a lot of things backstage. You find things out. He's got a lot more power than people realize.
I see. Well, yes, you must meet all sorts of people being in the theater.
Yeah, I've traveled across most of the country, met a lot of people. It's normal for me.
Are you trying to pierce her mask? It sounds like you are.
Yes, I am.
Then would you make that roll, please?
8.
All right. So on an 8, you get to ask one question from the list.
What do you intend to do at this party? Are you trying to just go along to get along? Are you trying to find more information? Like, why haven't you bounced if you don't want anybody to know that you were here?
Is it because you feel you've had a hand in this and you want to stop it from being a terrible disaster?
Like a little bit. Like, it's the combination of Celeste wants to do good. And has been just kind of roped into, like, this is the good assignment for the day. And she's like, okay, I guess this is what we do. Combined with the fact of part of her is like, damn it, my boyfriend brought a giant automaton to a city and it just tried to kill people. And now I, that feeling, you know, that very specific masks feeling.
Yeah, that one.
So you do not get the sense that she is planning to, like, destroy a party or kill anyone or anything like that. But you get the sense that there's probably, she's doing the right thing and just has complicated reasons. She's not doing it just because, like, I definitely want to help this Dr. Sybil Morris. She's kind of like, I guess this is what we're doing today. I guess we'll do this.
Okay, so Alina just sort of observes your behavior and sort of sees that you are, perhaps there's a resignation there, obviously. It's sort of, you know, befuddlement almost of how did I get myself into this? But also there is just like some underlying fear. And not fear for yourself, not fear of what we're going into, but fear for some, like, the implications of it, or for somebody else. So
all of that is a better worded version of what I was going for, yes.
So she just makes a mental note that you have a pressure point that that she might be able to exploit later.
Alina is the true criminal mastermind.
Yeah.
Celeste is going to struggle out of yet another dress that is not flexible enough for her. And just kind of go, can I just like get a skirt so I can go home and not be wearing this to walk through this city?
Absolutely.
It doesn't have to be anything fancy. It's literally just to be like, oh, I'm in not really clothes right now. Perhaps I should.
Some kind of a walking skirt.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's probably just because it's fine ass. It's like, it's the exact right color to match what she's wearing. Absolutely. And looks very nice. It's just serviceable for getting from point A to point B and is not a complete ensemble. Just to go over the leotard.
Well, I do apologize. We don't seem to have anything that would be suitable for your talents. But I must insist, and she opens up a drawer, and it's just lovely, like, ornate fans and change purses. Reticules?
Yes.
Reticules? And says, whatever you'd like, please help yourself.
Sure. And Celeste will go over and take something that will be revealed when we talk about our full outfits.
Sure. Absolutely.
Just, it's like the shot of just walks over and puts her hand in, and it'll be revealed next issue.
Zoe, you're finding, you're thinking leaving? Are you hanging out here? Are you going to find some place to take a nap? What's that?
I have a place to take a nap. It's called an apartment where my mom lives.
Okay.
I haven't been home all night, which is going to be fun, assuming she's not at work.
Let's say that you catch her. As, like, as you're walking up the stairs to this apartment, you're catching her as she's, like, heading out. Like, you almost, like, right as she's about to close the door, she turns and sees that you are there. She's just going to say, where were you last night, Zoe? You didn't come home.
Yeah, I was out.
It's unlike you.
meeting a few friends.
You weren't anywhere near where the dirigible crashed, were you?
No, I wasn't where the dirigible crashed. I was a little way away from there.
Well, thank God. I was worried.
You don't have to worry about me, Mom. I can take care of myself.
I don't know that you can take care of a dirigible landing on you, though. So that's my concern. And also, the Jacks are still out there killing people. It's a dangerous city.
Yeah, it can be, but...
Well, I'm late to work. Will I see you tonight for dinner?
Okay. I actually got invited to a thing, so I'll probably be out again.
Again. All right. What kind of a thing?
It's a little party that I got invited to last minute. A friend helped me pick out something.
Any friends I know?
Probably not. Just people I met around town. No, it's a small city. Coincidences happen.
All right. Well, have fun and stay safe and don't do anything dangerous. And I'll see you this evening. And I think that she is trying to lower your danger and raise your superior.
I'm going to reject that.
Okay.
Because they're right where I want them to be. The good news is I don't care what you think. The bad news is I am insecure.
Oh, no.
So it's a flat roll. And I rolled a 10.
Oh, boy. Nice. Okay. So on a hit, you hold yourself successfully. On a 10, you get to choose 2.
Yeah.
So what are you going to be doing?
She's saying that don't run around punching Jacks in dark alleys.
Yeah, you're too smart for that. Stay home or be safe. Don't do anything dangerous.
Because I don't want to reject my mom's influence. I don't want to cancel her influence. I want to shift my own labels, and I want a clear condition or mark potential. Ooh, I do want a mark potential. I think totally knowing that she has to go into work and she doesn't really have time to argue about anything right now. What I'm going to do is I'm going to shift my danger up and my mundane down. And, you know, I'm going to give her another hug and be like, Mom, I'm going to be fine. I mean, I fought a giant automaton last night and look, not a scratch on me. And then I'm going to step inside the apartment and close the door behind me.
And she kind of like has one terrified face. And then like, I think that she almost thinks that you're joking, but she's like, she stops halfway down the stairs and kind of like stops and is like, wait, was she joking? And then shakes her head and kind of walks off to go to work. And I want to end with Virgo. So where would you were going to, you're still muted in Zoom, by the way. You were going to go get your own clothes. So what does that scene look like? Where do you store your fancy attire?
Yeah. I think there's like an artisan in the House of Regulus who is just like a spectacular tailor. Someone who is like super into the textile arts and just makes like really weird fashion. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking someone like in the style of the Incroyables who came out of the French Revolution, who are basically like fashion punks in the 1790s. Like this person is giving them a reawakening. So like revitalizing the Incroyable like fashion sense and like making statements on revolution, especially in a post-Reconstruction America. You know, what do we see the role of fashion in? And obviously as a dandy, Virgo's super into all of that. And so I think Virgo goes to meet this person and we don't see it, like there's no dialogue in this scene. It's all panels. But it's like shapes, colors. At one point, like Virgo and this person are like sitting and like going like this. And then Virgo just in anger rips down a curtain. And then the person goes like, yeah, like cheering. yeah, it's very fun, like bright and colorful panels.
Yeah. And so you do eventually find something that will work, which we will see later. And all of that is sort of like, it's all just sort of, it's a series of panels. And then at the end of it, you're sort of like, you're collecting all of the things to take with you. And you hear, we see like, I think you hear someone calling your name And it is a speech bubble that the readers will see is kind of like has like squiggly text. Like it almost doesn't look like it's not the normal text. It's a little bit weirder. And you hear it like once and I think you kind of look around and you don't see anyone. And you hear your name a couple more times and it's getting this like it's a squigglier and you look around and we get a panel of there is a frog standing on there's like a frog on the door the windowsill on the side of this building and for like one moment you look and you think that it has human arms instead of frog arms but you kind of like blink and look back and see that it is in fact just a normal frog but it is and it's croaking and every time it croaks it sort of sounds like it's your name and it turns and it leaps off into the river that's next to this building. You turn to the last page of the comic and find a letter from H.C. Anderson to a local paper in Odense. I have met a creature from far out in the ocean, where the water turns dark and secretive. From very deep, deeper than the anchor will go, deeper still than where many steeples stacked one on top of another would still not reach the bottom. It is down there the sea folk live, their bodies covered in scales of fish, fastened so neatly that it is hardly possible to detect where the joint is made. Ribs and spines are prominent. Their phosphorescent colors dazzle the eye. I have no proof for you today, outside my word, that what I speak is truth, but I am planning a voyage and would like it to be made known that I will return with evidence of what I have seen.
Protean City Comics is a production of the Stop, Hack, and Roll podcast network. It is produced and edited by James Malloy. This issue was emceed by James Malloy, who can be found on Twitter at @AndTheMeltdowns. Highwire is played by our special guest, Emily Buza, from Whelmed, the Young Justice Files podcast, and she can be found on Twitter at @EmilyOfArden.
Virgo Regulus is played by Taylor LaBreche, who can be found on Twitter at Leviathan Files. Check out his podcast, Game Closet, and buy his games at riverhousegames.com. Will of the Wisp is played by Alice Kira, who can be found on Twitter at MagicalGirlKira. You can find her games at magical-girl-kira.itch.io. You can also find Alice in the Unlabeled AP podcast, another Masks podcast. You can find them on Twitter at UnlabeledAP with two L's, or anywhere podcasts are sold. Alina the Seamstress is played by Jess Benini, who can be found on Twitter at HerlockHolmes1.
The introduction is voiced by Peter DiGilio. All music was composed by Jim Malloy. Masks, A New Generation, is a game by Brendan Conway and published by Magpie Games. This podcast is created thanks to the financial support of backers at patreon.com/stophackandroll. Join us on our Discord at discord.stophackandroll.com. Follow us on Twitter at Protean City and on Instagram at Protean City Comics. Subscribe to Protean City Comics on iTunes or anywhere podcasts are found. Join us next Wednesday to find out what thrilling adventures lie ahead.